Okay, good morning, everybody. This Megillah Daf of Base. The Shiur, sponsored by, dedicated by Gary and Toby Greenstein, in memory of Yomi Yosef Menachem Ben Gershon, and Le'ilui Nishmaso, and breakfast sponsored by Bagel Munch, Le'ilui Nishmas Shimon Ben Zev, and Pega Bas Chayim. Gemara at this point was in the middle of exploring the question about how to break up the Aliyahs on Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh has four Aliyahs, and the section that you have to read is made up of three paragraphs. The Gemara calls a paragraph a parsha, and it says that the way the psukim are divided up, you have three paragraphs. The first one is eight psukim long, and then you have two psukim long, and then five. That's the breakup. Eight, two, and five. And you have to try to fit four aliyahs out of that, but you have certain constraints. And the Gemara presented the constraints are, you can't just, and you have to have, every aliyah has to have three psukim. So if you just go in order, you get three psukim and stop, and then you'll have two psukim left from the first paragraph, two psukim of the next paragraph, and five for the next one. So if you stop there, you would run into one problem, which is that you will have made an aliyah break too close to the end of a paragraph. And the Gemara said there's a principle that you can't make an aliyah break, you can't stop too close to the end of a paragraph, and you also can't step too close to the beginning of a paragraph. And the reasons for that are, I think we mentioned a little bit last time, and we'll mention it again now. Okay, so that's what the Gemara was wondering. It had no way to break up the psukim. If you have four aliyahs and four, it's not going to work, because then you have two more aliyahs and you don't have enough psukim left, unless you run into that same problem of where your aliyah breaks are going to end. But that was our problem. So on Chof Beis Hamid Aleph, we have the answer here. This was a question that was posed. It says here on Yen Chof Aleph Hamid Beis, a few lines up, it said this was a question Ula Bar Rav was asking Rava. It's always funny. These kinds of things are always funny. I mean, this is we're way deep into the Amoraim, and we're asking this question. What was everybody doing for all the generations, for all along, every single month? But anyway, apparently that never really disturbed the Gemara. So they're asking the question there, and it seems like we had no simple solution. And to compound the puzzle here, this is a question asked Rava. Rava tells him, third line of Chaf Beis Amar Aleph, Amar Lo, Rava says back to him, Zulo Shamati. Well, truth is, I really don't know. I mean, not that I don't know, but I never heard anything that describes exactly what you're supposed to do on Rosh Chodesh. Okay. Anyway, but he says here, Kayotze Bashamati, but I did hear the same type of discussion about something else. This non. And we're familiar with this from Maseches Tanis. At the end of Tanis, it says, the Mishnah says, what do you do in the Ma'amados, the different communities, when there was a situation, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, they would have different communities told that in given weeks they would be responsible for be the Ma'amad of that week. And it describes there in the Mishnah that this was a big deal for those communities. And they would have a laning every day of the week. It says, V'yom HaRishon, on Sunday, the laning for that community that had the appointment of being the Maimed, would read Kriyas HaTorah, it would be three aliyahs. It says, Vayom HaRishon, on Sunday of that week, they would read Bereishis V'Hirakia, the first two paragraphs of the Chumash, Bereishis V'Hirakia. Betani Allah, and the Braisa, that's what it says in the Mishnah. The Braisa says, well, look, Bereishis V'Shnayim, and your Hirakia V'Echad, two aliyahs for the first paragraph, one aliyah for the second paragraph. The Gemara asks, and the Gemara says, but on that Mishnah, v'havinan ba, and we challenged, or we wondered about that Mishnah, bishlama yihirakia b'yechad t'lasa p'sugiyav. We understand how you get one aliyah out of this second paragraph, yihirakia, that's a three-pasuk paragraph. Elaboratious, but you're supposed to get two aliyahs out of the first paragraph, bishnayim, that's only chamisha p'sugiyav. That's only five psukim. So how do you handle that? Anyway, that's a problem because the whole Kriyas HaTorah only has eight psukim total. So anyway, how are you gonna three aliyahs out of an eight pasuk section? V'tanya, And the problem is, according to Torah, lo yifchos mishlosha psukim. You're not allowed to have less than three psukim in an aliyah. So v'yitmar Allah, about that whole problem, we know that the early Amoraim already addressed that. Rav Amar, Rav said what you have to do, and this is what they would do in the communities, doleg. You're going to have to reread a pasuk. Shmuel Amar posik. And Shmuel, the other Amorav Amar doleg, and Shmuel Amar posik. It's a little funny, at the time that Rav and Shmuel were talking, they didn't have these things going on. So this was theoretically a historical machlokes about what they used to do. Anyway, Shmuel says posik, that you would actually divide a pasuk in two, and you would create nine psukim out of the eight actual psukim. So you just divide the pasuk in half, and then redo 2.5 psukim for one aliyah, 2.5 psukim for the other, and that's how you get your two aliyahs. The Gemara says, well, Rav Amar Doleg Maitam Elo Amar Posik. Why did Rav feel that rereading is preferable to posik? Gemara says, well, naturally, because Kasavar, because he holds Kol Psuka Delo Paski Moshe, any pasuk break that isn't officially made and that isn't in the Torah as Mesura LeMoshe MiSinai, in other words, any official pasuk break, you don't get Anan Lo Paskina. We don't get to break psukim in places that it's not, that the psukim are not supposed to be broken. So that's why rereading is preferable according to Rav. Shmuel Amar Paskinan Le. And Shmuel presumably says, that's okay. You can divide a pasuk up. There's official psukim. And then when you're reading, you can even stop even in the middle inside of a pasuk. The problem is, the Gemara says here, Veho Amar Rabbi Chananya. Our Gersi here is Amar Rabbi Chananya Kara. Rabbi Chananya the Akra is somebody who is either an expert of psukim, or a reciter of psukim, or a teacher of psukim. In any case, this Rabbi Chananya Kra was an Amora, I guess, or somebody among the Amoraim. He said, "Tzar gadol hayali etzel Rabbi Chanina hagadol." I got such grief from Rabbi Chanina hagadol. Velo hiter li lefsok ela letinoka shel beis rabban. He would only permit me to break psukim up only when I'm teaching kids. Because for the kids, you have to be able to teach them in smaller chunks, teach them phrases, teach them words, phrases, smaller pieces, and so you have permission. Rabbi Chanina Agadol only permitted this Rabbi Chananya Kra to break up psukim only for children, but apparently his other activity in talking to adults or in teaching, in other situations, he had a lot of grief from the fact that Rabbi Chanina HaGadol never permitted him to quote parts of psukim, only full psukim intact, beginning to end. And so that was apparently a universal policy. I guess this would only have been a problem. Even though it looks like this is like Rabbi Chanina HaGadol was the one who was makbid about this, but our Gemara is treating this as if, well, so this is a well-known or even a universal policy. So you can't break up psukim unless it's for kids where you have no choice. So the Gemara says, well, that's exactly the issue. The point is, time am I, Mishum Del Efshir. Why is there a special exception made for kids? Because you have no choice, because that's the only way you can do it. So Achanami Lo Efshir. So Shmuel is saying, that's true here too. You have to get three aliyahs. You have to get six psukim. You only have five psukim available. You have no choice. You have to make an aliyah and 2.5 psukim in. All right. So now the Gemara says, okay, Shmuel's policy is justifiable. Now the question is, well, why is that preferred? Shmuel Amar Posik, Maitam Elo Amar Dolik. Why would Shmuel prefer that over rereading? Gemara says, no, the problem is that it's not just about the rereading. The problem is gzeira mishum hanechnasin umishum hayotzin. Because, and this is something that we were alluding to before, which is the reason not to stop, read three psukim and then stop, and then go back and read the third pasuk, fourth and fifth pasuk as a second aliyah, the problem is hanechnasim and the yotzin. The people who walk out and the people who come in. People who walk out what's going to happen? If you stop, let's say your first aliyah was going to be three psukim and then you stop. So if somebody walks out, they look ahead and they see there are just two psukim left to the end of the paragraph, and they figure, I guess the second aliyah is just going to be doing that, and I guess if you have to, you can do a two-pasuk aliyah, and it's good enough. So they're going to walk away with that impression, is that even though normally you don't see it much, but if you have to, you can do a two-pasuk aliyah. And then when they start up again, the second aliyah, it's going to be, they're going to start back up at pasuk number three, and they're going to do 3, 4, 5. And so somebody who walks in, and they see that the Levi guy is getting an aliyah, and he starts at pasuk three, going to think that the Kohen guy only read the first two psukim. And they're going to think that, I guess, that's what you have to do when you're stuck. So that's why Shmuel says, I don't want to see that happening, and therefore posik. Now the Gemara says, Meisavei, but they had a kasha, they objected to this issue, and we're going to have to see what the objection is. The Gemara tries to spell it out, it's a Girsa question. Meisavei, we have a Braisa. Braisa says as follows, Parsha shel shisha psukim. If you have a paragraph, when they call a parsha, what we would call a paragraph. In the Sefer Torah itself, you know how the Torah doesn't have nekudos, doesn't have sof pasuk anything, it just has the words are all strung together, but the one thing it has is paragraph breaks. And so that's why we can refer to these paragraphs as distinct entities. And so it says here that if I have a parsha, which is a paragraph of shisha psukim, koren osa bishnayim, you can have two aliyahs. You can make two aliyahs out of that. Bishel chamisha psukim biyachid. But if it's a five pasuk long paragraph, you're going to have that done by the same person. In other words, one aliyah. You can't just stop in the middle of that five pasuk paragraph. If kara rishon shlosha, however, what if the first guy didn't know? And the gabbai wasn't paying attention, and the first guy stopped after three psukim, and then that was done, and then they noticed, hey, wait a minute, there's only two psukim left at the end of the paragraph. So then it says, Hasheni, kore shnai miparsha zu, v'yachem miparsha acheres. Then what do you have to do? So this is what it says in the Braisa. In the Braisa it says, okay, so then the next aliyah is going to pick up from that spot, is going to read the next two psukim, and he's going to have to read one pasuk in the following paragraph. The Yechem Parsha Acheres. The Yeshomrim, that was opinion number one. The Yeshomrim Shlosha. And as the other opinion, the other Tanaim, say, that's not true. It's not enough to stop one pasuk into the next paragraph. You have to keep going to three pasuk in the next paragraph. Okay, so this is a machlokes Tanaim. Tanakama holds that you can stop a pasuk into the next paragraph. He's not bothered by the fact that you're ending an aliyah too close to the beginning of a paragraph. And the Yeshomrim says, I'm bothered by that. You can't. You have to keep going a full three psukim in. Lefi she'ein maschil b'parsha pachat v'shlosha psukim. Yeshomrim says, because you can't stop there, one pasuk into the parsha. These rules are incidentally relevant because even though we normally just follow what it says in the Chumash, Berishon Sheni, but some shuls, they make a lot of hosafis. And when you make hosafis, you're bound by all of these constraints that it says over here. V'yemisa, so if you're right, and the Gemara, the way our Girsa and our Gemara reads, it's if you're right for either of the two suggestions of either you could reread psukim or you could divide psukim, then why aren't those strategies suggested for this Bryson in situations of five pasuk paragraphs? Five pasuk paragraph, you have options. Why does it make it seem like you have no options? You have options. You could, according to the Rav, you could reread and Kodesh Shmuel, you could divide up the pasuk. Gemara says, V'yemisa l'man d'yamer doleg nidlog, l'man d'yamer posek nifsok. Why does it make it seem like you have no options? Rashi doesn't have that gear. So Rashi thinks that the kasha is on the second case, which is in the B'dievid case, where the first aliyah only read three psukim and stopped, which he wasn't supposed to do. He stops there. So now the question is really only on Rav. Why does Rav not tell me, why does this Braisa not tell me, well, go back and read the pasuk and then keep going. Rav said that's what you will do in Maimados, in the five pasuk paragraph, he tells you you read three and then you go back and read one. So why isn't that considered an option here? And Rashi doesn't think that the kasha on Shmuel, because because you can't say posek at this point. It's too late. You read three full psukim. In any case, the Gemara answers, well, the answer is shiny hasam diavshe b'hachi. Now, that's the context of that, Bryce, is just a regular lighting on Shabbos or something, where you're just going to keep going anyway. You have more psukim to read. The parsha's not over. You have more to go. And so, just in terms of making hosaf over here, you can't divide up a five pasagor because you have more psukim you could choose from. So keep going. It's not, you're not stuck. It's only in the case of the mamados where you're stuck. So that's why. So that's the answer. The answer is that everybody seems to agree, and everybody's going to accept this. Whenever you're not stuck, you have no permission to divide up five pasuk, four pasuk, five pasuk paragraphs, six pasuk paragraphs you divide, but not smaller, and you can't take advantage of the reread or the divide option, because those are only in cases where you have no choice. Amar Rebbe Tanacham Amar Rebbe Shua ben Levi. Rishon ben Levi paskins. Rabbi Tanchum tells us Rishon ben Levi paskins halacha ki yesh amrim. Okay, we're paskining like the yesh amrim. Namely, you're not allowed to stop your aliyah too close to the beginning of a paragraph. Once you start a paragraph, you have to keep going until you're a good three psukim in. And you can't just stop only one or two psukim into a paragraph. V'yomer Rabbi Tanchum amar Rishon ben Levi. And Rabbi Tanchum said, Rabbi Shimon Levi said, that kishem she'ein maschil in parsha pachas meishlosh shepsukim kachem mishayir parsha pachas meishlosh shepsukim. He says that not only do you have to avoid stopping your aliyah one pasuk from the beginning of a paragraph, you also have to make sure you're not within three psukim of the end of a paragraph. Well, that's we knew that already. No, but we didn't yet know it exactly from the perspective of had a paskin on this point. So Rabbi Tanachum, according to Shimon Levi, is paskining that you also have to make sure you're not ending too close to the end of a parsha break. Gemara says, well, hold on a second. That much I didn't need to be told, because this Braisa had two opinions, right? And it was because there are two opinions that forced Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi to have to take sides and to paskin like one or the other, because it was a machlokas whether you could read one, that, you know, the guy who has to start the next parsha, can he stop at the beginning? Or does he have to keep going? So that was the machlokas at Tanoim here in this braisa up here. And Rabbi Shimon Levi said, you have to keep going to the third pasuk. That's what he paskin. So now he says, and I also feel it necessary to tell you that you can't end too close to the end of the paragraph either. The Gemara says, you didn't have to tell me that. There was no dispute about that. Pshita, hashto mas chalta dekam megal tanakama machmir yesh omrim. No. When it came to starting in a paragraph, the Tanakhama allowed it, but the Yesh Omrim didn't allow it. Right? So you can't just begin a new paragraph and then stop there. But when it comes to ending close to the end of the paragraph, even the Tanakhama doesn't allow that. That's what the Tanakhama said. You have to do a five pasuk aliyah in one shot. You can't just do three psukim and then stop. Because if you're too close to the end of the paragraph, everybody tells you can't stop there. Why did Rabbi Tanachum quote Rabbi Shimon Levi feeling it necessary to say, and also you have to make sure to avoid stopping too close to the end of a paragraph? So the way the Gemara presents it here is a kalva chomer. If we're passing like the Yesh Omrim with respect to the beginning of a paragraph, too close to the beginning, then of course you can't stop too close to the end, even Tanakhama didn't allow that. The Gemara says, well, look, not necessarily so, probably yes, but and yes in terms of the Braisa, but in terms of the logic doesn't have to follow necessarily that the concern that would insist that you not stop too close to the beginning of a paragraph, it may not necessarily insist that you avoid stopping at close to the end of the paragraph. Why? Mahu de sema nichnasim shchichi. Because if you stop too close to the beginning of the paragraph, then what is the problem that we're foreseeing may arise? The problem is somebody might walk in and misunderstand why is the aliyah starting here, and they'll calculate that probably because the previous aliyah was only one or two psukim long, and that's okay. So that's a problem. It's an error we want to avoid. But What would go wrong if you finish your aliyah close to the end? The problem is, well, somebody might walk out and then misunderstand what's going to happen next. And we don't want that to happen. Okay, but the Gemara says, wait a minute. Yotzim lo shchichi. But that's not likely. Nobody's going to walk out in the middle of the Kriyasa Torah. Demanachi sefer Torah v'nafki. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was envisioning this as being a milsa de lo shchicha. A milsa de lo shchicha lo gozer be'rabanan. The Chazal don't take action on events that they see as being rare events. And so even if a rare event happens, so then they don't legislate based on that. Anyway, that's what you would figure. So Kamash Milan, that probably it's more common than he is describing, or that he was imagining that you would think. All right. In any case, so we're still on the issue, believe it or not, of Rosh Chodesh, the Rosh Chodesh divide up. We haven't actually resolved it. We just have... We got kind of pulled into the Mamadas question, and then we get this Brisa that says explicitly you always have to leave five pasuk paragraphs intact. So now you have here the Tanakhama Maishat Shiure Dilo. The Tanakhama, though, seems to have the reverse attitude. We just said that the logic would be that you have more reason to be concerned about ending your paragraph toward the end of a paragraph because... at the beginning of the paragraph, because the fear is people will come in during the laning. And we have less of a concern of people walking out during the laning. And so why is the Tanakhama, who is not allowing you to finish close to the end of a paragraph because of a concern of the walkout, the yotzim, why doesn't he realize that that's less likely than the other scenario of somebody walking in? Maishna shiuri delo, misham yotzim. So that's what the Gemara says here. Tanakhama is thinking, and this is not just what he was imagining, this is Tanakhama's Shita. The way this is described is Tanakhama's Shita is that the Chazal, the Tanayim, did not put in a prohibition against stopping too close to the beginning of a paragraph. Why? Because Amri man de'ayil shiyu le'shayil. Because the reality is that when you sit down, you walk into shul, you sit down, we all know what the first thing you do is you turn to the guy next to you and you say, what's going on? What did I miss? What did they just do? So he's going to ask, why are we over here? And they're going to say, well, not because they had a problem or because they were more psukim or it wasn't just one or two psukim. So that error is not going to remain enduring. It's not going to endure. And so we don't have to take action to legislate against that. But a guy who walks out is going to remain with that error uncorrected. And so that's the reason, that's the greater concern for the Tanakhama. In any case, the Gemara says, Shalach le Rabba b'rei de Rava l'Rav Yosef. Rabba b'rei de Rava sent the word to Rav Yosef, Hilchasa mai. What's the psak on this? Shalach le Hilchasa doleg. The emtsoi dolgan, or doleg. So the psak that he sent back is we paskin doleg like Rav, which anyway would have been what we would have predicted because the Gemara has general policy about machlokos between Rav and Shmuel is that hilchasak Rav v'isurei. So in matters of ritual, Rav is going to win, unless it's an exceptional case, but that's rare. So Rav's opinion here was you reread. You don't divide up a pasuk. Apparently that's a greater problem. To divide up a pasuk is a greater problem. We'd rather have you reread. Hilchasamai, what's the psak? You reread v'emtzai dolgan. Rashi here, Rashi, Atosus, and all the Rishonim, everybody here tries to understand what exactly was the referent with respect to this psak. Is this about Ma'amados or is this about Rosh Chodesh? What did we just paskin? And so, okay, but the upshot of it all is that we follow this psak of doleg. As we all know how Rosh Chodesh works, we know that we reread a pasuk, and fine. It's more straightforward to say that this certainly was a psak with respect to Ma'amados, because some of the Rishonim don't like this solution with respect to Rosh Chodesh. They have other solutions that would avoid problems on Rosh Chodesh. But as far as the Ma'amados, you have no choice, and this definitely would be the solution. Tosis over here on the side, a couple of things that I have to point out. Tosis over here on the side say, wait a second. Top Tosis say, I don't understand. The way we're paskening is we're not allowed to start laning. We're not allowed to have an aliyah break too close to the beginning of a paragraph, too close to the end of a paragraph. Tosis say, but we do that in a couple of places. We do that every time. And Chol HaMoed Pesach, the fourth aliyah that you read, begins, Tosa says, two psukim from the beginning of the Pesach paragraph. Chol HaMoed Pesach, you know how it goes? The first aliyah is a Pesach, you read the whole paragraph about Pesach. And then in Chol HaMoed, we skip the first couple of psukim, and then we start from V'hikravtem, and that's the maftir for the whole thing. Tosa says, well, that's two psukim from the beginning of a paragraph. How'd you do that? And then Tosa is going to say, and every fast day, we read V'yichal. Vayichal is at a spot where Tosas say we're in the two psukim at the beginning of a paragraph, and why are we okay doing those things if the Gemara is adamant that you can't do those kinds of things? And it's not as if it's impossible to imagine a solution to this problem. So Tosas gives some solutions, and other Rishonim give solutions, but they point out neither of these is true. If you look in the Sefer Torah that we have, neither of these are true. The Ikravtim is three psukim from the beginning of the Pesach paragraph. And Vayichal is four psukim from the beginning of the paragraph. Which means that Tosfos and the Rishonim who are all raising the question are all working with a version of the Sefer Torah with parsha breaks, paragraph breaks, that aren't our paragraph breaks. And worse than that, there is no place where you would have a paragraph break on the Hikravtim, on the Pesach one. The Pesach one, there is no other place to have a paragraph break, which is another way of saying the Pasuk breaks were different also for them. So very clear from this top Tosis over here, they pointed out on the side, they point out that the paragraph breaks of the Chazal, even from the Rishonim, aren't the same as our paragraphs. And the Pasuk breaks aren't the same as our Pasuk breaks, not reliably in any case. Obviously, almost all cases are going to be the same, but there are going to be some situations where we have a different Masorah.
Do we know when it changed?
What?
Do we know when it changed?
I don't. I'm not sure anybody claims that it changed. That's the problem. The problem is that people are just claiming that they're perpetuating the Masorah, just we're observing. Well, those people are talking one way, and we're talking a different way, and so... But you have to hunt down where you see the beginnings of this, the discrepancies. All right. In any case, that's the psak, incidentally. When it comes to making hosafas, you have to be makbid about these things. You're not allowed to do a hosafa when you're too close to a paragraph break at the beginning or the end. And just as the Rama points out, but if you're at a paragraph break, you don't have to be concerned that there's another paragraph break that's too close to it before or after what you're up to. So you can stop at a paragraph break, just not at in the middle of a paragraph, too close to the beginning or end of a paragraph. Okay, the Mishnah was telling you about how many aliyahs you have in the different days of the year. So they were wondering, what about a Tanis Tzibur Bekama? How many aliyahs do you have on fast days? Rosh Chodesh, Yom Moed, Dika, Korban, Musaf, Arba. Do you say that, well, we know that there's four aliyahs on Rosh Chodesh, and on Chol HaMoed, Moed meaning Chol HaMoed, Dika, Korban, Musaf, there's a Korban there. So it's Arba. So you have four aliyahs. Aval Hacha, Deleka, Korban, Musaf. Fast days don't have a Korban, Musaf. Lo. Then it should follow only three aliyahs on fast days. Maybe that's the way it should go. O Dilma, Hachanami, Yika, Musaf, Tfila. Or maybe that's not how you should look at it. You should look at it that fast days have an extra tefillah. Have an extra tefillah. Which extra tefillah do you have on fast days? Rashi says it's Aneinu. Aneinu is the extra tefillah. Some of the Mefarshim in the back talk about, what about Ne'ilah? Ne'ilah would have been a fast day, Shemona Esrei. That's an extra tefillah. Okay, but in any case, they talk, but not on Tisha B'Av. They never had Ne'ilah on Tisha B'Av. So it's asking about what to do here on maybe on fast days. Maybe the fact that you say aneinu with extra tefillah is enough to justify a fourth aliyah or not. Tashma b'rosh chadashim v'b'chol Hashem moed korin arba. See, no, look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah is only lists Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed is four. Have the tiniest tzibur gimel. it would follow you only read three. But wait a second. But the Gemara says that diyuk doesn't work because you can make the reverse diyuk if you read their first line. Now, the first line of the Mishnah says you only read three aliyahs on Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos Menachah. So from this diyuk of the Mishnah, you can't tell anything. Because it just leaves it out, and you can't be medayik from the Mishnah which way should be the halacha on fast days. Tashma, well, let's see. Maybe we can get some information on this from an anecdote. We don't seem to have a brayso, so we have an anecdote that might give us information. The Rav, ikla lebavel betanis tzibur. Okay, Rav, first generation Amora, considered himself even a Tana, so it's kind of transitional. He ikla lebavel betanis tzibur. He made an appearance in one of the shuls, I guess, in Bavel on a fast day. And he does a couple of unusual things here we're going to explore. Come, Karab Sifra. He got up to lane. I guess they called him up to lane. Pasach, Baruch. He said the Bracha Rishona, and he read. Chasim velo Baruch. But he didn't recite a Bracha Aharona. Are we supposed to be alarmed about this? Is this notable enough to record? I guess so. I guess this was pretty notable. Nafal Kul Yalma An Payu. This is a fast day. So, they would eat tachanun. Well, everybody did nefilas apayim for tachanun, and Rav didn't. Okay, that's kind of weird. So let's see. Mechti, Rav, the Yisrael Kara. Okay, well, look, what do we know about Rav? Well, he's not a Kohen. So he read not the first Aliyah, he read one of the later Aliyahs, the third Aliyah. So if he's reading the third Aliyah, Maitai Machasim Elobach, why didn't he say a bracha afrona? Isn't it because a fourth Aliyah is going to be called up right after him? So there you go. So that story ought to imply that there's four Aliyahs on Rosh Chodesh. Otherwise, he would have said a bracha aharona. Gemara says, no, you misunderstood the story. That would have been clear if that's really what happened, but that's not what happened. Lo, Rav Bekahani Kara. No, really, Rav was called up first. He's not a Kohen, but they called him a first anyway. Deha Rav Huna, Kari Bikahani, because we know, I guess people who knew Rav Huna knew, or people who knew about what Rav Huna did, would know he used to get the first Aliyah. Rav Huna and Amora, also from Bavel, he used to get the first Aliyah. And so you see, even though he wasn't a Kohen, so you see that that was the kind of thing they were still doing. They were calling up the great Torah leaders ahead of the Kohanim. And when you look at the Gemara Gittin, it says on the side, the Gemara Gittin and Tess, where it establishes the rules about Kohen Levi and about how Tikkun Olam, we would have these policies of not to deviate from it. But even so, they would sometimes deviate anyway if there were these world-renowned Talmid Chachamim there in the room, they would kill them first. Gemara says, Vishlama Rav Huna Kari Bikahani. Well, hold on a second. Rav Huna, we understand. He was, and then the Gemara describes why it makes sense for Rav Huna to get the first Aliyah. Because after all, afilu Rav Ami v'Rebbe Rebbe Ami, the Gersa should be Rebbe Ami v'Rebbe Asi the Kahani Chashivi Dar the Yisrael, make of Kaifulel Rav Huna. It says because we knew that even Rebbe Ami v'Rebbe Asi, who were the most Chashiv Kohanim in Eretz Yisrael, they would defer to Rav Huna. I guess if you knew that, so then this explains what's going on. So Rav Huna's getting the Kohen Aliyah was not really a slight to the Kohanim, because even the top Kohanim would defer to Rav Huna, and everybody would feel honored to have Rav Huna get the first Aliyah, and that would be fine. Ela Rav? Where do you get the impression that that was same going on for Rav also? Ha'ika Shmuel de Kohana Hava v'dabar alei. Shmuel didn't yield to Rav. And so Shmuel, the fact that Shmuel was there in Bavel, meant that it's not appropriate for them to give Rav the Kohen Aliyah. Gemara says, no, it's not true. Shmuel namiyekav havakai filei l'Rav. No. The reality is that Shmuel personally did defer to Rav, for sure. Thus, Ravu, the avilei kavod. Only reason that you didn't see it was because when Rav was there, he didn't accept that deference. So he kind of counter-deferred to Shmuel. So that's why really what was going on was that Rav was entitled to get the first Aliyah. The Chiyavid lay b'fanav. He only deferred back to Shmuel when Shmuel was there. But if Shmuel's not there, then he accepted the honor. So he would take the first aliyah when he would be in shul. And therefore, he said the brach rishon and not the brach achronach, and I'm in mistavra. Anyway, that obviously makes more sense because the Rav, that the Rav Bakani kara, because Yisrael got etach b'Yisrael kara, because if you think that really Rav got the third aliyah, and the reason he didn't say a brach achronach because the fourth aliyah is going to say the brach, I said, what was he doing making a brach rishona for? Lefanah my time of baruch. What did he say the brach rishona for? So obviously what really must have been going on is it really got the first aliyah, and that's why, and you can't prove anything from him. Mar says, well, no, not necessarily. Hold on. We can understand why Rav might have gotten the third aliyah. It's not compelling that he must have gotten the first aliyah, just because he said a brach rishona, not a brach achrona, because we could explain that other ways. Because liachar takana. Maybe this was after they changed the whole Kriyas HaTorah practice, and they had everybody getting saying brach rishona, brach achronas. And so once that was the practice, everybody would say a bracha rishona, even the Levi, the Yisrael, whatever. So Rav saying bracha rishona wouldn't bother me that he said that, and that doesn't prove that he got the first aliyah. He might have gotten the third aliyah. I says, well, hold on a minute, but he didn't say bracha achrona then. If this is Eilachar Takana, Yachi Liachar Anami Livrech, then he should have said the bracha achrona. This apparently was going on right around the transition when they changed the Kriyas HaTorah time from the non Brachos Rish Aliyah to Brachos Arish Aliyah. Gemara says that Rav should have one or the other. Either he's getting the third Aliyah and therefore he needs to say both Brachos or neither Brachos. So why does he say Brach Rishon and not a Brach Achron? Gemara says, well, because Rav made this calculation in his head. Shani Heichad Yosef Rav. Rav decided that when I'm here in Shul, no one's walking out. So that's what Rav decided. So he said, look, I'm here. So Demeya Laili, people might be rushing into Shul to catch me, but Mepaklo Nafki, but no one's walking out. And therefore what? And therefore, I guess Rav decided so that, I mean, I guess it wasn't really that firm that everybody was doing these things. So Rav kind of decided that I don't need to say a bracha achrona for the purpose which would have been necessary for the Yotzim. But I do need to say a bracha rishona for the purpose of the people who come in, the nichnasim. Okay, in any case, that's just another way of saying, at this point, all we've done is we've wrapped up that whole anecdote about Rav to be saying that we can't prove entirely one way or the other what to do about fast days. So the fast day question is still on the table. Tashma, so let's see if we can answer the fast day question this way. Zeh haklal, kol sheyesh bo bitul melach aliyam, korin kegon tanis tzibur, v'tishabav, korin gimel. The braisa that they're quoting over here is pretty explicit. It says whenever the longer davening would encroach on your work day, then we have to cut down the laning. Kigon tanis tzibur or tishabav, korin gimel. The shein bel bitzel melach aliyam kigon resh chodesh v'chol amoed, korin dalid. And whenever it wouldn't encroach too much on the work day, like on chol amoed, you're not really working, and resh chodesh, you're not really working. So then you have four aliyahs. Everybody wants to try to figure out, what does that mean? Why aren't you working on resh chodesh? What's that all about? Some Rishonim say, well, the minhag was not to work much on Rosh Chodesh, to either take it off or to take a half a day off, whatever. So that wasn't so, that was the minhag. But Rashi goes into a whole thing over here because the women don't work on Rosh Chodesh. And the women are not allowed to work on Rosh Chodesh. And why can't the women work on Rosh Chodesh? Because in yesterday's Parsha, when it says about the Egel that the women didn't contribute, all that's in this Rashi over here in parentheses. There's a little parenthetical insertion into the Rashi over here about this medrash, about the women not donating, and it was the men who pulled the women's jewelry, and they gave their jewelry, and not the women, and the women are going to get scarred for it, and the women don't work on Rosh Chodesh B'Olam Hazeh, and in the future, they're going to get great scar for what they did at that time. Okay, but in any case...
I heard Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg the other day, and he said something very nice on that. He said that because every neshama needs some sort of inspiration and some sort of a... He said because the women danced when they crossed the Yarden, and the men did not. The women already danced. They already did their thing, and therefore they didn't need to have the Egel. Whereas the men who didn't dance and celebrate
at that time until the Egel time when they did.
They did it.
Very nice. So this halacha here, it's one of those things. I don't really have the impression of that people are that that careful about this, and I don't know if people really treat this as a real rule. But here and there, you find that this is treated as a real rule about women not working on Rosh Chodesh. And again, in any case, not entirely sure why women's not working on Rosh Chodesh matters as far as and shul when they're laning. Okay, you have to figure that out on your own.
Is that more on Shabbos or going to work?
Don't know what to tell you, but it's at least going to at least
nobody works.
No. It means that
when
is
they
it?
Say malacha, do they mean the type of malacha we don't do on Shabbos, or they mean
right? You don't flip on the lights, or is it that you just don't do arduous work like laundry and like accounting? I don't know exactly what the I don't know what this is referring to, but in any case, it's according to Rashi, that's why there's no bittul malacha on Rosh Chodesh, and you can have an extra aliyah, but at fast days, where you're going to work, so then not. Amar Rav Ashi, v'ha'anan lo tana nachi. Rav Ashi says, hold on a second. That braisa might be very clear about a three aliyah fast, laning on fast days, but that's not our Mishnah. Our Mishnah does not say it depends on that. Ha'anan lo tana nachi. Zehaklau kol yom sheyesh bo musaf ve'eno yom tov korin arba. Our Mishnah says, Kol yom sheyesh b'musaf eino yomtiv. If it's a day where there's an extra korban, musaf, but it's not yomtiv, you read four. So isn't that clearly yasuye mai, lavli yasuye tanis tibur v'tishbav? So Rav Ashi says, isn't it clear from the diuk of the Mishnah zeh klal to be marbe fast days that it's a four aliyah thing? It's a four aliyah thing against that braisa. Where it says, well, that's going to be a problem, Ula Ravashi, because we have a different price that we're about to pull out of our pocket here. Ula Ravashi, Masnisen Mani, Lo Tanakama, Velo Rabbi Yossi. This, Anya, this is a, let's see, according to Ravashi, we're going to have a problem with the following Brysa, possible Mishnah. I'm not sure if this is Brysa or Mishnah. It says as follows. It says, Chol Lios Besheni Uva Chamishi. If it falls out on Monday or Thursday, what's the it? I think it's Tisha B'Av, this it. Yeah. Tisha B'Av, Tanya, La Rashi says, from his restaurant on time. It's okay. So it says, if Tisha B'Av falls on Monday or Thursday, Korin, Gimel Umafti Rechad, Bishlishiva Revi, but if it falls out on Tuesday or Wednesday, Korin, Echad Umafti Rechad, Tanakama says, you just have a one aliyah laning. And Rabbi Yossi, Amir Lo, Liolam, Korin Shlosh Umaftirechad. The Mishnah says it's always three Umaftirechad. Now, while you think that we've just proved four, because it says Shlosh Umaftirechad, that's not how it's understood here at all. This Umaftirechad means, and one of those is Maftir. One of those. So it always means, so this Mishnah or Braisa is saying that it's a three Aliyah only. Three Aliyah only. So that's very clear. That it's three aliyahs on Tisha B'Av. So, v'yelo kashya zehaklal. So anyway, that really could have resolved everything. I mean, this braisa is saying three aliyahs on Tisha B'Av fast days. What about the diuk of zehaklal? V'yelo kashya zehaklal. Lal yasir rosh kodesh moed. No. That only means, namely, rosh kodesh ed moed. The Gemara says, that's not a diuk. That's explicit. Rosh Chodesh and Moed Korin Arba. Mara says, yeah, I suppose. Simana bi'alma yahiv. Yeah, I guess so. Meaning that the Zeha Klal is just giving you the guideline, or the mnemonic maybe, not intending to include anything extra. So you shouldn't confuse Chol HaMoed with Yontif to be the same. Instead, they just want you to keep this principle in mind, called the Tfele Milsa Mechavrei, any day which has something in that's, above That other day is going to have more aliyahs. Tefillah Gavri Yaseir is going to have another aliyah over that other day. Hilkach. So this is why you have the structure as follows. Berosh Chodesh Moed. The base amount is three aliyahs on regular days, nondescript days. Rosh Chodesh and Moed has the additional component, namely Diyaka Karban Musaf. So then Korin Arba. The Yantif. The Yasser B'Yasiyas Malacha Korin Chamisha. Yantif has the additional component of Yisr Malacha. Over Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh, that's five aliyahs. Yom Kippur, the Onesh Kares. Yom Kippur, which has an Onesh Kares on the Yisr Malacha, is six. And Shabbos, the Yika Yisr Skila, is a Misa, that's a Misa's based in, that's seven. So, okay, we have closed the discussion on how many aliyahs do you have on fast days. So that, namely, it is three. Gufa. Gufa, earlier we mentioned, kind of in passing, and we want to explore a little bit more. Rav Ikla Lebavla B'tanis Tzibur, that whole event there, when Rav was in shul on a fast day, and he leaned, you know. But the second half of that story says something about Tachna. Kam Krab Sifra Basach Baruch Hasim V'lo Baruch, and we tried to explain what that's all about. We had different possibilities. Nafal Kul Yalma An Payu, V'Rav L'Nafal Alapay. And everybody did Tachna with Nefil Sapayim, not Rav. My time Elo Rav Lo Nafal Alapay. Why didn't Rav do Tachna? So the Gemara answers, well, because Ritzpa Shelevadin Isa. Well, because they had a stone floor in the shul, Vitanya, and it says in the Braisa, on the Pasuk, Evan Maskis, the Evan Maskis Lo Sitnu, the Artsachem, Hishtachavos Aleha. Pasuk says, you're not allowed to have a stone where you, in your areas in your place for bowing on. Aleha yata mishtachav yartzachem. You're not allowed to bow on the stone in outside of the mikdash. Avalata mishtachav el avonim shal beis hamikdash. But beis hamikdash, everybody was always bowing, and that was a stone floor. Kiriula diamar ula lo wasra torah el ritz bashel avonim bilvad. Like Ula said, that the prohibition in the Torah is only bowing down on a stone floor. Bowing down on a stone floor. So since it naturally had a stone floor, that's why Rav didn't do it. Yachim, my ear, you Rav. So that what was so unusual about, what was specific about Rav? I feel the kuhunami. Everybody else should have had the problem and then should not have been bowing down and doing the filas apayim. Gemara says, well, obviously, there was only a little patch of marble where Rav was. Kameh de Rav Avi. Everybody else had a dirt floor. So that was okay. And Gemara says, well, so then why did Rav stay there? Lezel gabi tiburavil in pola lape. Why did Rav just walk over and do nevil sapayim off the stone area? Gemara says, well, no, he could have, but lo boy lebeshach tibura. He didn't want to be inconvenience everybody for him walking over there. Rashi says they would all have to stand up. They're all trying to sit down for tafana, and I was walking over there, and they're going to have to stand up, and so he didn't want to do that. So he stayed where he was and just didn't do Nefilas HaPayim, and everybody else did. And that was for Tachanun because of his stone problem, stone floor problem. The boy's Ema, alternatively, maybe here's what's going on. What was different about Rav? Rav, Pishut Yadayim V'Raglayim Hava Avid. Maybe there was a stone floor everywhere in the shul, and the problem specific for Rav was because Rav, when he would do Tachanun, he would just lay flat on the floor, hands spread out. Ukiri Ula, and following the injunction of Ula, which is namely what? Yamar Ula, lo wasra Torah, ela pishidem regulayim bilvad. The only prohibition about bowing on the stone floor is only when you're spreading out, but not if you're just bowing down on your knees or curling over, that kind of a thing. Gemara says, well, v'lei po la lapay, v'lo lehev pishidem regulayim. So then maybe today, because he was on a stone floor, he shouldn't have spread out, and he should just do kind of the minimal kind of bowing like everybody else was doing. Lo mishani miminogei. He didn't want to change his normal practice. This could be a great guide as to how we're supposed to behave with respect to confronting situations where we can't exactly follow regular practice, and you have community practices and individual practices, but okay. So maybe it pays to spend a lot of time trying to analyze what's going on here in light of the policies that you should follow for these kinds of situations. But in any case, maybe that's the suggestion, is that that's why. He always did a Vilsa Paim stretched out. He normally wouldn't have a stone floor. In this shul, they had a stone floor. Everybody else was doing regular tachanun and not doing a pishudayim regalayim. And so the only objection was going to be for him, and he didn't want to change his practice. The boy is Ema, or maybe it is what's going on. Adam Chashev Shiny. Maybe that this is different. Maybe what's different is that Rav always avoided doing tachanun, nefilas apayim, pishudayim regalayim, because he was looked up to by the people as being a tremendously great leader. Kid Rebbe Elazar. The Amar Rebbe Elazar, because Rebbe Elazar has the following statement to say about the great leaders. Ein Adam Chashev Rashai Lipol Al Panav. Elim Keinanak Yoshua Ben Nun. A great leader is not allowed to go and fall down, Lipol Al Panim, unless he is confident, he has assurances that he's going to get what he's praying for. Like Yeshua ben Nun. Dechseva, Yom Hashem al Yeshua, kum! Okay, like Hashem told Yeshua, okay, go and stand up. You don't have to lie here anymore. I'm going to give you what you're going to lead you into victory. So with that policy, that means that Rav would never have in public done his Nefilas HaPayim. That's what they all point out. They all point out this is not a personal thing. This was like only in public, that the Adam Chashev can't do Nefilas HaPayim in public because it's, I don't know, because I guess the people, what does it say here? Tosas makes the point. It's only a public display of this kind of bowing. And if you're not going to get it, so then people lose confidence or something. And so, but on your own, then of course you do. Now, the Tosas incidentally points out over here about this bowing on a stone floor, is that, well, if the reality is that you can only, that the objection is only when you're bowing fully spread out, then the problem was that earlier in the Gemara, the previous line, well, we didn't deal with that. What were we assuming was the prohibition? It was regular Nefilas HaPayim. And why did we think that was a problem? Tosfos point out that even though I'm in a Torah, the prohibition is only about lying on the floor spread out on a stone floor and bowing, even in your worshiping Hashem. But the Rabbanan, there are prohibitions even against doing regular bowing. And we're all familiar with that. That's why, you know, when we bow down on Yom Kippur, we put a thing down on front, under our head so as not to be really on the stone floor itself. We are kind of a hefsek. There's a hefsek in between. So it's not, we're not in violation of even the Rabbanan, even if we're not spread out all the way.
Same thing with the Kohanim when they go for duchening.
Well, like they're not. We put the thing on the floor. That's not about this. They're not bowing down. That's not this. Tanur Rabbanan. The Braisa says, with respect to bowing down, it says here there are three modes of bowing. It says vayikod, vayishtachave. So there's a keda, and then there's hishtachava, and then we all know there's korim umishtachavim, there's kriya, lechroa. So what are these three things? So it says here keda alapayim. Keda means when you go down, your face down to the floor. Shenemar vatikod basheva apayim aretz. Like it says, like describes that Kedas Basheva bowed to David HaMelech with her face down to the ground. Rashi Tosfos talk about how this is not really a source because there are other psukim and say other things. Korea, but it's an indication. It's a mnemonic. Korea al birkayim. When it says lechroa, it means on your knees. Dechenu omer mechroa al birkav. Okay, it says that Korea is on birkayim. And ishtachava zo pishidem reglayim. And ishtachava lishtachavos, it means down on the floor, spreading out, hands and feet out. Shenemar havona vo ani avimcha v'yachecha lishtachavos lecha artza. Like the pasuk about Yaakov and Yosef. Okay, so those are the three modes of prostration, I guess, in the form of, I guess, worshipping. Different terms that are used. Levi Achvi Keda Kame de Rebbe. One time, Levi was demonstrating how to do Keda, what it refers to, in front of Rebbe, and apparently he wasn't in shape. And the itla. And he threw out his joint. I don't know. It says he became lame from that. Okay, I don't know. We're told that was the case. But the Gemara says, wait a second. Something wrong with that story. Because that makes it seem as if the reason that he became injured was because of his demonstration of Keda, which was inappropriate, apparently. But we know that we blame a different... His injury is blame a different cause. Namely, the Gemara asks, V'hakagar mulevi haba Rabbi Elazar liolam al yatiyach adam dvarim klapi ma'ala. No, wait a second. But we have a different story, a different tradition, which says Rabbi Elazar said that you always should be careful how you talk. Don't try to be too challenging to Hashem. Sharei Adam Gadol yitiyach dvarim klapi ma'ala v'itla. Because we know there was one person, Adam Gadol, who spoke that way, and apparently soon afterwards he became crippled. Umano Levi. And that was Levi we're talking about. Gemara says, so what was the cause? The Gemara says, well, have a hargar malay. Well, they both contributed to the cause. Amarav Chia Baravin. Rav Chia Baravin says, well, you know, Chazin Elhuli Abai V'Rava de Matzli Atzluye. I remember seeing Abai and Rava both, that when they would do Tachanun, and when they would have to be bowing down on a stone floor, they would just be tilted onto the side, and that would avoid all the problems altogether. So that's one of the solutions. If you find yourself bowing and there's a stone floor there, and I don't know, you could just avoid the problem by tilting onto your side or leaning on your side. And that's how we do for tachanun. We do tachanun if you have a table or a hefsek or a sleeve or whatever, so then you can go flat down. But if you don't, so then you have to be kind of on your side when you do tachanun to avoid the problem of bowing over a stone floor. All right, there's more to say about this business.